a fake smile when Ava waddles over with her baby doll and a comb. Ava hands both to me and goes to play with some of her other toys. I comb the doll's hair. That girl has me trained. Doesn't have to say anything, and I do it. Once Ava's out of earshot, Nana says,
"When y'all taking me back to my house?"
"What happened?" Mama asks.
"Keep your damn voice down."
Ironically, she's not keeping hers down.
"Yesterday morning, I took some catfish out for dinner. Was gonna fry it up with some hush puppies, fries, the whole nine. I left to run some errands."
"What kind of errands?" I ask, for the hell of it. Nana cuts me the look, and it's like seeing Mama in 30 years with a few wrinkles and gray hair she missed when coloring her hair. She'd whip my behind for saying that.
"I'm grown, little girl," she says. "Don't ask me what I do. Anyway, I come home, and that heifer done covered my catfish in some damn cornflakes and baked it."
"Cornflakes?" I say, parting the doll's hair.
"Yes, talking about it's healthier that way. If I want healthy, I eat a salad."
Mama covers her mouth, and the edges of her lips are turned up. "I thought you and Pam got along."
"We did, until she messed with my food. Now, I've dealt with a lot of things since I've been here, but that," she holds up a finger, "is taking it too damn far. I'd rather live with you and that ex-con than deal with this."
Mama stands and kisses Nana's forehead. "You'll be all right." Nana waves her off. When Mama leaves, she looks at me.
"You okay, little girl? Carlos told me you were in the car with that boy when he was killed."
"Yes, ma'am. I'm okay."
"Good. And if you're not, you will be. We're strong like that."
I nod. But I don't believe it. At least, not about myself. The doorbell rings up front. I say, "I'll get it." Put Ava's doll down and go inside. Crap. Chris is on the other side of the door. I want to apologize to him, but damn it. I need time to prepare. Weird, though. He's pacing. The same way he does when we study for tests or before a big game. He's afraid to talk to me. I open the door and lean against the frame. "Hey."
"Hey."
He smiles. And despite everything, I smile too.
"I was washing one of my dad's cars and saw you guys pull up," he says.
That explains his tank top, flip-flops, and shorts.
"Are you okay? I know you said you were in your text, but I wanted to be sure."
"I'm okay," I say.
"Your dad's store didn't get hit, did it?"
he asks. "Nope."
"Good."
Staring and silence. He sighs.
"Look, if this is about the condom stuff, I'll never buy one again."
"Never?"
"Well, only when you want me to," he quickly adds, "which doesn't have to be anytime soon. Matter of fact, you don't have to ever sleep with me or kiss me. Hell, if you don't want me to touch you, I..."
"Chris. Chris," I say, my hands up to get him to slow down, and I'm fighting a laugh. "It's okay. I know what you mean."
"Okay."
"Okay." Another round of staring and silence. "I'm sorry, actually," I tell him, shifting my weight from foot to foot, "for giving you the silent treatment. It wasn't about the condom."
"Oh."
His eyebrows meet.
"Then what was it about?"
I sigh. "I don't feel like talking about it."
"So you can be mad at me, but you can't even tell me why?"
"It has nothing to do with you."
"Yeah, it does, if you're giving me the silent treatment," he says.
"You wouldn't understand.
Maybe you should let me determine that myself, he says. Here I am calling you, texting you everything, and you can't tell me why you're ignoring me? That's kind of shitty, Star.
I give him this look, and I have a strong feeling I look like Mama and Nana right now with their "I know you didn't just say that" glare. I told you, you wouldn't understand, so drop it.
No.
He folds his arms.
I came all the way down here.
All the way? Bruh, all what way? Down the street?
Garden Heights Star is all up in my voice right now.
Yeah, down the street, he says. And guess what? I didn't have to do that, but I did. And you can't even tell me what's going on.
You're white, okay?
I yell.
You're white!
Silence.
I'm white?
He says, like he's just hearing that for the first time.
What the fuck's that got to do with anything?
Everything! You're white! I'm black! You're rich! I'm not!
That doesn't matter, he says. I don't care about that kind of stuff, Star. I care about you.
That kind of stuff is part of me.
Okay, and it's no big deal. God, seriously, this is what you're pissed about? This is why you're giving me the silent treatment?
I stare at him, and I know, I'm straight up looking like Lisa Janae Carter. My mouth is slightly open like hers when I or my brothers get smart, as she calls it. I've pulled my chin back a little, and my eyebrows are raised. Shit, my hand's even on my hip. Chris takes a small step back, just like my brothers and I do.
It doesn't make sense to me, okay? That's all.
So like I said, you don't understand, do you?
Bam. If I'm acting like my mom, this is one of her, "See, I told you" moments. No, I guess I don't,
he says. Another round of silence. Chris puts his hands in his pockets.
Maybe you can help me understand? I don't know. But I do know that not having you in my life is worse than not making beats or playing basketball. And you know how much I love making beats and playing basketball, Star.
I smirk. You call that a line? He bites his bottom lip and shrugs. I laugh. He does too.
Bad line, huh? He asks.
Awful. We go silent again, but it's the type of silence I don't mind. He puts his hand out for mine. I still don't know if I'm betraying who I am by dating Chris, but I've missed him so much it hurts. Mama thinks coming to Uncle Carlos's house is normal, but Chris is the kind of normal I really want. The normal where I don't have to choose which star to be. The normal where nobody tells you how sorry they are or talks about Khalil the drug dealer. Just normal. That's why I can't tell Chris I'm the witness. I take his hand, and everything suddenly feels right. No flinching and no flashbacks. Come on, I say. Uncle Carlos should have the burgers ready. We go into the backyard, hand in hand. He's smiling, and surprisingly, I am too. 10. We spend the night at Uncle Carlos's house because the riot started again as soon as the sun went down. Somehow the store got spared. We should go to church and thank God for that. But Mama and I are too tired to sit through less than an hour of anything. Sikani wants to spend another day at Uncle Carlos's, so Sunday morning, we return to Garden Heights without him. Right as we get off the freeway, we're met by a police roadblock. Only one lane of traffic isn't blocked by a patrol car, and officers talk to drivers before letting them pass through. Suddenly, it's as if someone grabbed my heart and twisted it.
Can we... I swallow. Can we get around them? Doubt it. They probably got these all around the neighborhood. Mama glances over at me and frowns. Munch? You okay? I grab my door handle. They can easily grab their guns and leave us like Khalil. All the blood in our bodies pooling on the street for everybody to see. Our mouths wide open. Our eyes staring at the sky, searching for God. Hey, Mama cups my cheek. Hey, look at me. I try to, but my eyes are filled with tears. I'm so sick of being this damn weak. Khalil may have lost his life, but I lost something too. And it pisses me off. It's okay, Mama says. We got this, all right? Close your eyes if you have to. I do. Keep your hands visible. No sudden moves. Only speak when spoken to. The seconds drag by like hours. The officer asks Mama for her ID and proof of insurance, and I beg Black Jesus to get us home, hoping there won't be a gunshot as she searches through her purse. We finally drive off. See, baby, she says, everything's fine. Her words used to have power. If she said it was fine, it was fine. But after you've held two people as they took their last breaths, words like that don't mean shit anymore. I haven't let go of the car door handle when we pull into our driveway. Daddy comes out and knocks on my window. Mama rolls it down for me. There go my girls. He smiles, but it fades into a frown.
What's wrong?
You about to go somewhere, baby? Mama asks, meaning they'll talk later.
Yeah, gotta run to the warehouse and stock up.
He taps my shoulder.
Hey, wanna hang out with your daddy? I'll get you some ice cream. One of them big fat tubs that'll last about a month.
I laugh even though I don't feel like it. Daddy's talented like that. I don't need all that ice cream.
I ain't say you needed it. When we get back, we can watch that Harry Potter shit you like so much.
No.
What?
He asks. Daddy, you're the worst person to watch Harry Potter with. The whole time you're talking about... I deepen my voice.
Why don't they shoot that nigga Voldemort? Hey, it don't make sense that in all them movies and books, nobody thought to shoot him.
If it's not that, Mama says, you're giving your Harry Potter is about gangs theory.
It is, he says.
Okay, so it is a good theory. Daddy claims the Hogwarts houses are really gangs. They have their own colors, their own hideouts, and they're always riding for each other, like gangs. Harry, Ron, and Hermione never snitch on one another, just like gangbangers. Death Eaters even have matching tattoos. And look at Voldemort. They're scared to say his name, really. That he who must not be named stuff is like giving him a street name. That's some gangbanging shit right there.
Y'all know that make a lot of sense. Daddy says, just because they was in England don't mean they wasn't gangbanging.
He looks at me.
So you down to hang with your old man today, or what?
I'm always down to hang out with him. We roll through the streets, Tupac blasting through the subwoofers. He's rapping about keeping your head up, and Daddy glances at me as he raps along, like he's telling me the same thing Tupac is.
I know you're fed up, baby. He nudges my chin. But keep your head up.
He sings with the chorus about how things will get easier. And I don't know if I want to cry because that's really speaking to me right now, or crack up because Daddy's singing is so horrible. Daddy says,
that was a deep dude right there. Real deep. They don't make rappers like that no more.
You're showing your age, Daddy.
Whatever. It's the truth. Rappers nowadays only care about money, hoes, and clothes.
Showing your age, I whisper.
Pac rapped about that stuff too, yeah. But he also cared about uplifting black people, says Daddy. Like he took the word nigger and gave it a whole new meaning. Never ignorant, getting goals accomplished. And he said thug life meant
the hate you give little infants F's everybody. I censor myself. This is my daddy I'm talking to, you know.
You know about that?
Yeah. Khalil told me what he thought it means. We were listening to Tupac right before, you know.
Aight. So what do you think it means?
You don't know? I ask.
I know. I want to hear what you think.
Here he goes, picking my brain. Khalil said it's about what society feeds us as youth and how it comes back and bites them later, I say. I think it's about more than youth, though. I think it's about us, period.
Us who?
He asks. Black people, minorities, poor people, everybody at the bottom in society.
The oppressed, says Daddy.
Yeah, we're the ones who get the short end of the stick, but we're the ones they fear the most. That's why the government targeted the Black Panthers, right? Because they were scared of the Panthers.
Uh-huh, Daddy says. The Panthers educated and empowered the people. That tactic of empowering the oppressed goes even further back than the Panthers, though. Name one.
Is he serious? He always makes me think. This one takes me a second. The Slave Rebellion of 1831, I say. Nat Turner empowered and educated other slaves, and it led to one of the biggest slave revolts in history.
Aight, you on it. He gives me dap. So what's the hate they're giving the little infants in today's society?
Racism?
You got to get a little more detailed than that. Think about Khalil and his whole situation before he died.
He was a drug dealer. It hurts to say that. And possibly a gang member.
Why was he a drug dealer? Why are so many people in our neighborhood drug dealers?
I remember what Khalil said. He got tired of choosing between lights and food. They need money, I say, and they don't have a lot of other ways to get it.
Right. Lack of opportunities, Daddy says. Corporate America don't bring jobs to our communities, and they damn sure ain't quick to hire us. Then, shit, even if you do have a high school diploma, so many of the schools in our neighborhoods don't prepare us well enough. That's why when your mama talked about sending you and your brothers to Williamson, I agreed. Our schools don't get the resources to equip you like Williamson does. It's easier to find some crack than it is to find a good school around here. Now think about this, he says. How did the drugs even get in our neighborhood? This is a multi-billion dollar industry we talking about, baby. That shit has flown into our communities, but I don't know anybody with a private jet. Do you?
No.
Exactly. Drugs come from somewhere, and they're destroying our community, he says. You got folks like Brenda, who think they need them to survive. And then you got the Khalils, who think they need to sell them to survive. The Brendas can't get jobs unless they're clean, and they can't pay for rehab unless they got jobs. When the Khalils get arrested for selling drugs, they either spend most of their life in prison, another billion-dollar industry, or they have a hard time getting a real job and probably start selling drugs again. That's the hate they're giving us, baby. A system designed against us. That's thug life.
I hear you. But Khalil didn't have to sell drugs, I say. You stopped doing it.
True. But unless you're in his shoes, don't judge him. It's easier to fall into that life than it is to stay out of it. especially in a situation like his.